Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Matt Doherty. Matt's a coach through and through. Prior to his coaching career, he was a member of the legendary Starting Five that led the 1982 University of North Carolina's men's basketball team to a national championship. A few of the highlights of his coaching journey include serving as the head coach for the University of Notre Dame's men's basketball team and the head coach for the University of North Carolina's men's basketball team. He was voted the 2002 Associated Press National Coach of the Year. He currently serves as an executive coach with Vistage, where he guides executives and their companies through the process of achieving explosive personal and organizational growth. He is the author of the book Rebound, From Pain to Passion, and hosts a podcast of the same name. And I am very excited to share an awesome conversation with you today. Matt is fantastic, and he is going to weave together many of the lessons that he learned in his basketball playing and coaching career with his executive coaching career, like the importance of consistency and fundamentals to experience success in all of our endeavors. His approach to communicating for respect, his six no's of leadership, that's K-N-O-W-S, and the importance of putting thought into our decisions. And he has a great quote about how decisions can 10X our lives. This is an awesome conversation. I'm really excited to share it with everybody. And thank you so much for being here again this week for another conversation. Before we jump in, let's thank our sponsors. As always, we have HumanTel. If you've ever wanted to develop the skill set of accurately interpreting what people are likely thinking and feeling in the moment, based on observing shifts in their emotions through their facial expressions and nonverbal communication, I highly recommend you head over to humantel.com, read their research, read their articles, and then choose which one of their self-paced, best-in-class online training programs are right for you. I highly recommend them. I've done them all myself. And while you're there, you can enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off the training class of your choice. Again, that's over at humantel.com. For the professional interviewers in the audience, please head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can have all your questions answered about the International Association of Interviewers, qualifications for membership at the individual and team level, access to resources, including online and in-person training, interviewing support tools, networking opportunities, and so much more. That's also where you can learn if you qualify for the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation, what it takes to pass the exam, and what it takes to maintain the designation once you do, of course, along with what it can mean for you and your career moving forward. All of that and more at certifiedinterviewer.com. And finally, while you're online, please head over to inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the customized programs our clients ask us to facilitate for their senior leaders, negotiators, business development professionals, HR executives, to teach them how to obtain the everyday confessions during all of their high impact conversations in order to overcome the obstacles that they typically run into and achieve their personal and organizational goals. All of that and more can be found at inquasive.com. I appreciate y'all being here week after week. Thank you so much. So now without further ado, Matt Doherty. Hello, Matt. It is so great to see you. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
I'm great, Michael. It's good to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed our last conversation, and I've been excited to dive in into even more detail today with you. So to jump right in, because I know you're working this into a full day, and I really appreciate it. You're a coach. You've been a coach essentially your whole life, one way or another. Currently, you coach executives. And on your website, there's a quote that I love, and I'm probably going to get it a little wrong, so correct me on that. I don't want to misquote the man right in front of his face, but here I go. It's something along the lines of
quoting me is flattering, so go ahead.
Well, thank you. Life is a series of decisions and dealing with the consequences. Hopefully, I got that right.
Yeah, perfect. You nailed it.
Thank you. Could you please start by walking us through what you mean by that and how that works into your coaching approach?
Yeah, I think it's all about personal accountability and the thought that needs to go into decisions, that you can't just make a decision and then blame other people. I think being very intentional with your decision making, and then when things don't go well, that you take accountability for it. I worked for Roy Williams at Kansas as an assistant coach for 7 years, and he used to say, you know, when you're pointing a finger at someone else, there are three coming back at you. And I think to me, it's all about accountability. You know, you make a bad decision, a bad investment, you hire a bad, you know, sales manager, whatever it may be. And it's easy to say, oh, you know, they, but I do this all the time with my coaching clients. They complain about someone on their team. And I say, okay, let me ask you a question. Who hired them? And I said, who onboarded them? Who trained them? Who's holding them accountable? I said, ultimately, it all goes back to the leader. And either they're directly involved or they're indirectly involved in holding yourself accountable. So that's basically the gist of that. And you look back on your life and you say, boy, you know, I made a decision at 17 to attend the University of North Carolina. And that changed my life and put it on an upward trajectory forever. And the impact of one decision can really 10X your life in a positive or negative way.
For certain. I was writing that down. I was writing your quote down as you were talking. And I love that thought. One decision can 10X your life in either direction. And you mentioned choosing UNC when you were 17. As you work with executives now, I imagine it can be difficult to get them to understand that one decision can 10X your life in either direction. Talk about college kids or high school kids, trying to get them to understand that, I'm sure is even more difficult when life basically revolves around how am I feeling and what do I want today?
Yeah, I was pretty serious as a kid. I took notes. I took a lot of notes. Like I'd go to basketball camp in fourth grade and I'd come back home as a day camp and I'd write notes about what I learned that day. So I was pretty intentional, pretty anal. You know, putting things, you know, I ranked all the schools and weighted different decisions more importantly than others. And so I was always pretty analytic. And that was a strength, but also a weakness because I was probably too analytic on the court. And that could lead to a whole nother discussion. But I think that I was blessed to have good parents and I was blessed to have good high school coaches that helped me understand the process. And, you know, I always try to learn from others. You know, that's why I say this, you know, life's impacted by three things: the people you meet, the books you read, and the trauma in your life. And, you know, so you can meet people without meeting them by reading books, listening to podcasts. And I think that, you know, I remember as a kid reading books about basketball, Bill Bradley and Pete Maravich. Bill Bradley was a great player for the Knicks. And that book changed my life. I mean, in sixth grade, I read this book and he said, you know, if you're not working on your game, somebody else is. And when you two meet, that other person will have the advantage. I immediately quit baseball. So in sixth grade, I made a decision to quit baseball so I could focus on basketball. And that helped me become a better basketball player and, you know, get a scholarship to North Carolina. So, you know, that was a decision I made in sixth grade because I read a book. And so I just, you know, I'm very fundamental as a coach, you know, read, you know, people you meet, the books you read, the decision, you trauma in your life, your life's nothing but a series of decisions and dealing with the consequences. Pretty fundamental about basic stuff that, you know, if you do it over and over again and develop good habits, you can improve your life.
Yeah. And I'm sure we're on the same page with this. And I would argue the fundamentals aren't necessarily basic. Like they're fundamentals for a reason. Those are the building blocks. That's the foundation. Those are the steps. And they've been fundamentals for so long that as you get to different levels in business or sports or whatever your personal endeavors are, things start to change a little bit, but those fundamentals, they're consistent underneath, and that's why they're so important.
And that's why I think people need coaching. And this sounds self-serving, like an infomercial all of a sudden. But, you know, I needed a basketball coach. People need golf coaches. People need mental coaches in sports. People need psychologists. And so leadership is a practice. And I never really understood the term practice when it was referred to a dental practice, a medical practice, a law practice. I used to joke like, oh, you're a lawyer. Don't practice on me. When you get good, then you could come to me, right? But, you know, it's a legal practice. Laws change. Technology changes. Things change. So you have to, and it's a skill. You know, you have to continue to work. When a doctor cuts on somebody, that's a skill. If they take a couple of months off and then come back, I don't want to be that first operation. I don't want to be the first person on the operating table. So, you know, it's just like leadership. Leadership is a skill, and you can get out of practice. I say this, that, you know, if you watch golf and you watch the Masters on that first Thursday, the best players in the world finish the round and they go to the range and work with their golf coach to tweak their swing. Well, as a business leader, a leader of any organization, do you have a coach that's helping you tweak your swing? Because you can get out of practice and develop bad habits. It could be as simple as showing up a few minutes late for a meeting. It could be as simple as leaving the conference room a little messy after a meeting. It could be as sloppy as not double checking an email and hitting send because you're in a rush and all of a sudden, you know, there's a typo, or worse yet, you've offended somebody inadvertently. And if you read it over again, you could have avoided that.
Oh, great points, which tie a little bit back to finding the balance between intentional practice, which is necessary, as you pointed out, in all endeavors that we really want to be good at, not just proficient, but we want to be higher achievers at. And earlier you mentioned some people, and I've fallen into this trap before, can overanalyze a situation as part of making those decisions. You mentioned it in a basketball context, so please take it whichever way that you want to go. But where have you seen people striking or having difficulty striking the balance in overanalyzing and committing to a decision, whether sports, business, both?
Yeah. Wow, this is great. I love this topic. I wrote a book called Rebound, From Pain to Passion. And in it, I talk about the six no's, K-N-O-W-S, of leadership. And I made up a goofy acronym, STEVIT, S-T-E-V-I-T. And I make up a story because stories stick. And STEVIT was a kid, 7-footer from Eastern Europe that I recruited. So it just sticks in my head and hopefully sticks in some other people's heads. But STEVIT, S for self, T for team, E for environment, V for vision, I for industry, T for truth. The most important thing a leader could do is understand themselves, know themselves. So how do you get to know yourself? Well, you do assessments. You fail. You learn from the failure. You do a debrief of a meeting. You do debrief of an event. You have a trusted advisor that tells you the truth. Because the truth is a gift. And so what I've learned over the years, that when I'm an assessment junkie, I love DISC, Myers-Briggs, Predictive Index, Culture Index, is that I'm in a DISC profile. I'm a high D, high I. And what does that mean? Well, a high D is a director, a driver. A high I is an influencer, likes to sell. I like to win. So on the other side, I'm impatient. You know, that's my biggest strength. On the other side, I'm impatient. I don't like to read emails that are more than two sentences and three bullet points. Like, if it's longer than that, I probably won't read it. I might glance at it and then flag it and, you know, hope it goes away. So knowing myself, now there are times I have to forcibly slow down. When someone comes to me, I need to take a deep breath. I feel, I call it spewing mercury. I feel like mercury is building up in my esophagus and getting ready to come out. I have to take a deep breath, tap the brakes, listen, and listen. It's something you're really good at. So I've got to listen and train myself to listen and be present. And so knowing yourself is the number one. You know, I can make some impulsive decisions because I like to go fast. Now, that's a strength at the end of a game when there's 2 minutes to go in a tight ball game and all hell's breaking loose around you. I am very present and very focused and feel calm in that environment. But, you know, I can make some quick decisions because I'm impatient and I don't like to read all these emails. So I've got to then augment my skill set by creating a team that goes to the T instead of it around me that complements me and can augment my skill set. So when I was a head coach, I never liked to plan camp. I never liked to deal with the budget. I didn't like to deal with travel. So I had my assistants do that. I like to recruit. I like to prepare practice. I like to scout our upcoming opponent, and I like to raise money. And you need to do that as a head basketball coach. Everything else, I try to delegate.
Real quick, you just gave me about 7 follow-up questions I want to ask, so I'm making notes to try to track them all. But you mentioned the 6 no's, and you gave us 1. I'm going to put links to your book. If you want to hold it back and direct people to your book, I'm good with that. But if you're comfortable, can you drop the other 5 no's on us real quick?
Yeah, the other 5 no's, the Stevin. So know yourself, know your team, know your environment, know your vision, know your industry, and know the truth. And I think that, you know, I talked about knowing yourself. So I know my biggest strength is my biggest weakness. I am intense. I am driven. I am competitive. I can be too intense, too driven, too competitive. So I've got to understand to sometimes take my foot off the gas. I use this analogy. I drive a speedboat and I've got a team with me and we're flying and we're hitting wakes and bouncing around. I've got my hands on the wheel, hair's going back, hat's falling off, and people are falling out of the boat and they're in the wake and they're drowning. I'm going fast. I'm like, you should have hung on better, you know? I don't want to circle back and rescue them because I've got to go. I'm going here. So understanding that, you know, in the disc, you know, people that lead with a D are a small percentage of the population. I want to say it's like 4%. Well, that means 94% of the population doesn't think like I think. So, and most people are S's, like 69% of the population start with S. They like steady. They don't like change. Okay. So now I'm like, oh my gosh, if I would have known this before I was a head coach, I'd be a better head coach. I thought everyone should think like me. And now I read this. I'm like, oh gosh, okay. So I got to go slower with this person, or maybe I can't be as aggressive in my delivery with that person. And that's knowing your team. And then knowing your environment, most organizations, as they grow, become political. So what are the politics in an organization? You have to understand it. Politics is real. Politics are real. And I used to discount it, like, yeah, you just do the right thing and everything will be okay. No, you have to sometimes play the political game. And there could be somebody on the org chart or off the org chart that's an off the org chart boss, okay? And just because they're not on the org chart doesn't mean they don't influence your career. And I think understanding that environment, vision, This is where I think a lot of people in business miss the boat. In sports, it's easy. Like, we want to cut down the nets and win a national championship. We want to hold the trophy at the end of the year after we win the college football playoff championship. You know, it's easier to cast that vision. I say leaders are in charge with three things: cast the vision, drive the culture, and engage in large business transactions. And I don't think they're good at casting the vision. See, casting the vision has to be done on a regular basis. You can't just do it January 1st and say, we want to get to $50 million in revenue and have 55% of the market share in the Southeast. That doesn't get it. And plus, that doesn't excite, right? So I think you want a goal, a vision that excites people. Jim Collins calls it the BHAG, the big, hairy, audacious goal. That's excite people. It makes them nervous a little bit. And they go for it. And you got to talk about it all the time. A coach doesn't talk about winning the national championship. You know, basketball season started this month, basically. They don't say it, you know, the first day of practice and not say it again. You know, you bring it up regularly. Like, we want to cut down the nets. This effort today in practice wasn't good enough. It's not a championship effort. We need to do better. So that vision, you have to be able to. I've said this before. You got to create a picture in your team's mind and then hand them the paintbrush to actually paint the masterpiece. Because now, if they're involved in that and they get to paint it, now they have ownership in it. Now they're a participant. Now, when things don't go well in a practice, you say, whoa, 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 man, Michael, you had a hand in this. You painted that. That's where we're going. Today is not going to get us there. So you've got them on the hook. And then the industry, and this sounds simplistic, but you don't have to know everything about an industry. Like Jack Welch of GE, when he was the CEO, I'm sure he didn't know how to put together a refrigerator. But he sure knew how to put together a team and drive a culture that sold a lot of refrigerators. And I think that, you know, where is your industry going? So you need to be able to peek around quarters, anticipate, see trends, understand the industry. And then lastly, and probably the most important, you got to mine for the truth. Because if you're not mining for the truth, if you don't manage the truth will manage you right out the door. It's like a tsunami. You could be on the shore and get crushed by it, or you could ride the wave. And I'd rather know before a major event occurs that I could have headed that off by mining for the truth a few months, a few quarters earlier. I don't think people are comfortable with the truth. You have to create a safe zone where the truth can bubble up to you. If I was a head coach again, Michael, and I hired you and you were my lead assistant, I'd probably put on your business card, Michael Reddington, truth teller. And that's like a pass for you to come to me whenever you want, whenever you feel necessary to say, hey, Matt, you know, I think you were too hard on that kid in practice. Hey, Matt, I think you need to go to the assistant and apologize to him. Hey, Matt, I think you screwed up by blaming the officials in the post-game press conference. Now, I'm a competitive person, so my initial reaction is to probably lean in and you know, want to attack. I got to take a deep breath. That's why it's a practice. And sit back and say, Michael, thank you very much. It takes a lot of courage to come in and say that to me. Thank you. And especially if you did it in front of the team, you know, the assistants, their assistants say, you know, I want to model the behavior, right? So I've got to model that behavior. And now I contemplate and I decide what I want to do with it. But you had the courage and the freedom to come to me and tell me the truth. Because I know when I was a head coach, I didn't mind for the truth. I tried to talk my truth into existence. And I'm 6'6". I used to be 6'7", but I'm getting older. And so I'd go into my assistant, and he was handling academics, overseeing academics. And we had a player who was a really good player, but not a great student. And I'll call him Bob. And I'd stand up, and I'd be in a rush. I'd be going around. I'd stand up over his desk. He'd be sitting down. I'd say, Bob, coach, Bob's doing well in school, right? And he'd be like, yeah, coach, he's doing well. And then I'd leave. I'd go, check that off. I'm good. What else? All right, we're set for camp, right? Boom. I'd go to the next coach, and I got my stuff done, man. We're good. And then I know those guys met in the conference room and probably say, hey, man, coach came in and asked me about Bob. Bob is failing 3 out of 4 classes. He probably won't make it to the spring semester. I did not have the courage to tell him because I didn't want to set him off. That's not mining for the truth. If I had to do it again, I would have sat down or gone for a walk and say, lead him into an easy answer. Like, hey, coach, I got to believe Bob's struggling in school. He wasn't a great high school student. We were lucky to get him in. I imagine he's not doing well. Tell me, give me an update. Now he would tell me the truth. That's mining for the truth. I didn't mine for the truth. So all of a sudden, the reality came and, if he was suspended academically, that hurt our team. I could have done something to prepare for that. And that's just an example of what I'm talking about.
It's a great example. And when you gave me the Stevet and truth was the end, I immediately thought, I bet truth is the hardest. I bet for most leaders, most of the time, truth is the hardest. And you illustrated the point so well. Can I geek out just for a minute on
truth? Let's geek out.
In questions. So the example you gave was tremendous. There are so many times we ask questions at a time and in a way that is convenient for us, inconvenient for the other. And then we get pissed when they don't give us the truth or what we want to know. And we don't realize it's our fault. And the question that you gave as well, I'm sure Bob's doing good, right? Or Bob's doing better, right? Or Bob's going to be eligible to play on Saturday, right? Bob, in the opening tournament, Bob's going to be there, right? And the way you nod your head when you do it, if people can't see, we call that implied expected answers. So there's only one right answer to that question. So now if you tell me Bob's failing, I'm not pissed at Bob, I'm pissed at you because right. You didn't give me the question I wanted. So now I have to, in air quotes, lie to you. Right. So in theory, I can now get mad at you for lying to me where you didn't lie to me. You protected yourself based on how I asked you the question.
That's right.
So sitting down with them, going for a walk is a great one, making it more casual. And for me, when I ask those kinds of questions, especially from like a coaching perspective, I always like to frame the question around how we're going to handle the situation as opposed to the people themselves. So if I was to say, hey, what are you doing for Bob? Well, that's on me. I'm nervous. Is Bob going to fail? Well, I like Bob a lot. I don't want to snitch on him. But instead, hey, we brought Bob on board, hell of a ball player. We knew he struggled with school. We were lucky to get him in. Our kickoff tournament's coming up in a couple weeks. I got to ask, which areas does Bob currently need the most support in? Coach's support. So now there is no danger in me honestly answering that question because you told me Bob's a good kid and we're not talking about how I've sucked at keeping him passing his classes. So it's easier to talk about. So that was a tremendous example. I appreciate you using it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've tried to coach my clients on is that as a leader, whether you're the CEO, president, owner, founder, whatever it may be, is that to create white space on your calendar. What do I mean by that? Don't stack meetings and delegate, because you are empowered with casting the vision, driving the culture, and engaging in large transactions. And so if you have meeting after meeting after meeting, you don't have time to take that person for a walk and plan what you're going to say. You're hasty. you're as John Wooden would say, be quick, but don't hurry. You're in a hurry. So you don't take the time to communicate properly. And as a result, it could lead to a disaster.
For sure. And it's, I just got off. I was a minute late logging on. Of course you called me. So thank you very much,
Michael. I mean, it's not the culture we're trying to create here, you know, as a disciplined listener.
Thank you. But I was coming on straight from a virtual program I was doing as I try to make excuses for myself. And one of the things we talked about with that group was that there is no such thing as I don't have time. None of us have time to do all the things we want. The answer is always, I didn't make the time. Because we make the time for the things that we feel are valuable enough. And now I'm going to get way out over my skis because I never played organized basketball, let alone coached at the Division I level. But for a coach or a lead, let's take it out of basketball, like a business leader who needs to talk to somebody to understand where they are in a project. Well, I don't have time to ask Sally where we are in a project. So the next time she walks by my door, I'm just going to say, Sally, we're good, right? And when she says yes, I'm going to feel good. And then when I find out the project is late, I'm going to be pissed at Sally. But instead, if I'm like, oh, wait a minute, this project's actually really important. We're onboarding a new customer. That could be 15% of our net new revenue this year, opens up a new industry. And by the way, that guy's a Vistage member and could introduce me to his Vistage group. And that could be more business for me. It's really important long term that we get this right. Ooh, maybe I should have a conversation with Sally a month and a half before the deadline so I have time to make the switch. And now when I sit down with Sally, it's the same thing. Sally, best part about working with customers, sarcastically, is they get to change the rules of the game. We don't get to change the deadline. So I'm curious, what are the top three obstacles that could stop us from making the deadline? Sally's safe. She can answer. The outcome's important enough. I'm invested in the conversation. So that tie-in is perfect. And I do want to make sure we give a direct shout out to your work at Vistage as well. We've done a bunch of basketball talk, which I love because I'm a big sports fan.
I'm an executive coach at Vistage worldwide. Been for about 5 years. It goes by fast, and it's fulfilling work. I get as much fulfillment after an all-day Vistage meeting as I've had after a game. You know, you debrief. You're satisfied. You're trying to think of watching the film and how could I do it better? But there's great fulfillment in being a Vistage chair. And I think the average members stay over 5 years, so they see the value in it. It goes back to, you know, I don't want to, this is your podcast, you're the host, but it goes back to purpose. I think really understanding, and I work with my clients a lot on purpose, because especially ones that are going to retire early, you know, what is your purpose in life? And, you know, we can get spiritual here. Why did God put you on this earth? What talents did he gift you with? And are you utilizing them? And so, you know, when I realized that I'm truly a coach, a teacher and a coach, okay, I'm not coaching basketball anymore, but I can still teach and coach. And Vistage has given me that platform. By the way, Jin, the term coach, you may know this, I posted this recently, came from Hungary in a town called Coach. They built coaches that, horse-drawn coaches that move people from point A to point B. And that's how the term coach came for, you know, sports coaches, athletic coaches, executive coaches. Is our goal is to move people from point A to point B, you know, have them get better. And I just thought that was pretty cool. So, sorry for the little tangent.
No. More people logged into this conversation to hear you talk than me, I can promise. And I think the best part about that Hungary story is what I'm taking away is if they don't listen, you can string them up to a horse and drag them from point A to point B. I don't know if that's how they meant it or not, but that's what I heard. Something else I heard that I want to touch on before I ask a question I've been sitting on for a little bit is when you're talking about truth tellers and the importance of having truth tellers, I certainly wouldn't dare to drop names because I wouldn't know anyway. I only know what people say. But how many executives have we seen in business or coaches have we seen in sports or general managers in sports who the story anyway is nobody around them would tell them the truth. And that's why they weren't successful. So the question that I would put out there rhetorically to the people listening is, who's your truth teller? Who is the person or people that can come to you without consequence and say, you missed that, you dropped the ball, you sucked, you failed, here's where you need to see to get better. And if you think to yourself, I'm not really sure I have somebody, give them that business card. Make somebody or some people your truth teller. When you were talking about basketball earlier, you talked about how you loved recruiting and you loved fundraising. And now coaching executives, selling and business development is obviously a huge part of what they do. So I'm curious, what aspects of your recruiting and fundraising strategies that made you so successful, because you wouldn't have been in your roles if you weren't, do you carry over to help businesses sell themselves, their services, their products, both internally and externally?
Good question. I mean, I do like to sell. I do like to recruit, and that's a big part of Vistage. And so I do like to lead, and that's a big part of Vistage. So it's fulfilling work. I have a podcast as well called The Rebound Podcast, and I interviewed Patrick Lencioni. And, he has several books, and he's terrific. But we were talking about things that bring you joy. What is your working genius? And he had a lot of success and realized he wasn't really as happy as he'd hoped. And he realized he wasn't a galvanizer. He wasn't one to, fire up the troops on a regular basis. And that's hard to delegate, but he did. He delegated that. And so he has a galvanizer. Now, it doesn't mean he won't come in from time to time and, do the Newt Rockne speech. But I think understanding yourself and realizing I'm not good at that. I don't like that. And as the leader, as the boss, you can delegate and pick and choose what you like to do. I had a really cool experience as a Vistage chair. One of my clients, who was the founder with his wife, really loved financials, but he was the CEO and the CFO. And you see a lot of in small to mid-sized organizations, people wearing two hats. But he was miserable. And he came to a Vistage meeting and said, I'm being a jerk. And we processed this issue. And he then promoted someone to CFO, CEO within the organization. And he just settled in at the CFO. He's working less hours. They're making more money. And he's happier. So just because you founded the company doesn't mean you have to lead the company. Right. And so, again, going back to knowing yourself is so important.
And augmenting your team around you to I was going to use the word cover. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but to balance or build around what we do and don't do well. And if we're not having those painfully honest conversations with ourselves, then often the toughest voice to listen to is the truth teller inside our own mind. Because it creates that cognitive dissonance. Well, I want to feel like I'm great. I'm awesome. I'm in charge. I've got it all under control. That other little voice back there can be really, really important.
That's right.
When you were talking about your disc earlier, the balance of the high D and the high I, anytime people ask for whatever it's worth, and people can pour as much salt on this opinion as they want, whenever they ask me, what are the traits of great listeners, I throw out patience is, if not the first, the second one, because we've got to let the conversation come to us. We've got to listen for that hidden value and pull on those threads. So when I think of the driver, that's somebody who sees the vision, is impatient, gets those A players, gets them in line. Let's go take that objective down. Then when I think of the influencer, I think of somebody who kind of sits back, sees the field, has that vision, but now is preparing people to take their own role and feel as if they're in control and they're making the decisions. So I'm curious, in your career, how have you learned to balance being the driver and the influencer who can often use two different sets of tools in their role?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the best listeners are the S's in the DISC profile. So really the D's complement the S's. Like if I'm a D, I want to have an S around me. You know, one of my best friends is probably an S. I've never gotten an argument with them, and I roomed with them in college. And so the thing that I've, if my wife watches this, I'm in trouble. Okay. And so I am actually a really good listener as a vintage chair, because we have one-to-one sessions. So I meet with the group, and then, you know, during the month we have one meeting, and then I meet with everybody individually. And one of the things people say is you're a good listener. And I listen for that thing that they almost don't say or try to gloss over. And I call it drilling for oil. Like, I feel like I'm over an oil. Like, whoa, whoa. I'm like, stop, let's back up. I want to go back to what you just said or didn't say, and we're going to drill down on that. And then it opens up a whole nother topic. So I think I'm a really good listener. The thing is, sometimes I have a full tank in my listening tank, and by 5 or 6 o'clock, there's no gas left in that tank, and I go home, and then I probably cheat my wife, you know, because I don't listen. So I need to make sure I leave a little in the tank for her when I get home, because listening is the best form of respect, right? And so when you're locked in, I had a meeting this morning with a client in a restaurant. And one thing I've been told is don't let the client have the better view, because they'll get distracted, right? So I had the better view. I was looking out in the restaurant. Somebody walks by, you know, don't be a bad squirrel, right? Don't start turning your head and jumping all over the place. And so I really had to focus on him, especially when he was talking, right? Because, you know, people that talk sometimes don't look at you. And all of a sudden when they do, you want to be looking at them. And so, you know, I had to focus, even if I saw somebody come in that I may have known, just to psh, and lock in. And so that is a practice. Listening is a practice. You know better than I, you can become a better listener. And so I think I've become a better listener. And oh my God, I hope my wife doesn't watch this.
Well, I mean, this is what I do for a living, right? And my wife would say the exact same thing. And it's not only the tank in the end of the day, but there's also greater attachments and greater consequences. So at work, and I'm not trying to short sell any client relationships, but this is a job, right? So part of me being successful at my job is locking in. But when I go home, this is my life. And I love my wife and I love my son and nothing means more. But that also means that the consequences are greater. Because if I upset a client, if I really upset them, I lose a client. I don't want that to happen, but that's the worst case scenario. Assuming I upset them a little bit, they're going to call me tomorrow. They might swear at me. That's fine. I don't care. And then we work through it. But if I upset my wife or my son, you know, that's, on one hand, it's a part of life. But on the other hand, it creates greater consequences. So it's that, not only do we have less gas in the tank, but there's greater consequences and more emotion involved. And that it makes a huge difference.
And the couch is not nearly as comfortable as the king size bed.
I can vouch for that. But to take it away from how we might both be jeopardizing our marriages with this conversation, we've tried to kind of weave that thread between coaching basketball and coaching executives. And for me, I never played Division I sports. I played high school sports in New Hampshire, if that means anything to anybody. Like, that's where I maxed out. But I imagine that when you're coaching at the Division I level, University of North Carolina, Kansas, Notre Dame, other stops that you had along the way, you are largely dealing with teams that are all A players. I would imagine even your, and I mean, I don't mean this pejoratively, but even your bench players were the best kid on their team. And probably the best kid on their AAU team. And from the time they were young, they were the star. And now they're on the team. And I feel like a lot of times when business leaders look at coaches and sports leaders and try to emulate what they do, they're trying to emulate a coach that is dealing with A players who have all committed to one mission. When we look at our businesses, if we're lucky, we got a few A players. We got a bunch of B players, some C players. Hopefully we've gotten rid of the D's and F's. And they have varying levels of commitment because of their personal life and their stage in life and all of these other things that are going on. So I'm very curious as to how you take your experience from coaching mostly A players and transitioning that to help executives get the most out of an organization with varied levels of players and commitment.
That's a great question. Most kids, they grow up and dream about playing football at Alabama or basketball at North Carolina. And so they're going to be passionate and enthused and motivated to do their best each and every day. You know, you have XYZ Corporation downtown Charlotte. Most people didn't grow up dreaming about working at, you know, Acme Food Supply in downtown Charlotte, but that's their job. This is where leadership makes a huge difference. As the leader of Acme Food Supply, can you create a vision that excites people to want to work there? Like, are you selling food? Or are you ending starvation? Are you nourishing community of Charlotte? What is your mission? What is your purpose? And I think when you can align your purpose as an individual with your company and use your purpose through that vehicle, that platform, that is your company, that's powerful. So even if it's Acme Food Supply, I think you have to understand your vision, understand your purpose, understand your mission, understand your core values, and promote that when you're recruiting talent. And that you're going to come to Acme, and this is who we are. This is how we do things. This is how we care for our people. And this is how we're going to represent ourselves in the community and get people excited about that or not. But you don't want to recruit everybody. Now, Pete, the war on talent, it's hard. It's hard to find good talent. But when you differentiate yourself and you appeal to somebody, so that goes back to knowing the team. And if I know that in high school you served some volunteer, you know, charity that aligns with Acme Food Supply, you might lean in and realize this isn't just a job. This isn't just a 9-to-5. They align with your values. And I think that so many companies just offer a job. They don't offer opportunity. They don't align. I was with at Costco yesterday talking to an employee there. And he talked about him going through the training program and how he's been there over 10 years. And he loves Costco because they are putting him through this training program, leadership program, and are helping him reach his full potential and achieve his goal. So you really have to get to know the people and appeal to them that it's not just a job. You know, I mean, there's a famous story we've all probably heard. I heard it again yesterday, that the janitor at NASA, when John F. Kennedy went to go to the bathroom, he asked him his name and he said, "What do you do?" And the janitor said, "Well, I help put people on the moon." That's leadership. And people treated him with respect and know that, told him he made a difference. Like Coach Smith was so good at North Carolina, talking to the last player on a team and helping them understand that they made a difference. They impacted winning because of the way they came to practice and prepared the starters. Treat everybody with respect.
Great point. And people interpret how we communicate with them as how much we respect them. And those individual conversations matter a whole lot. I know you got a call. We got a couple of minutes left. I'd love to ask you one quick selfish question if I could.
Yes.
I have a 7-year-old son that loves basketball. How do I coach him?
You have a 7-year-old son that loves basketball?
Yeah. How do I coach him?
Yeah. I think you put him, you know, give him the opportunity. Like, he's got to want it,
yeah.
You know, like expose him to it, you know, whether it be camps or leagues, teams, and expose him to it. And, you know, let them play against the better competition. And, you know, it's okay to fail. And I wish they had it like the old days. I'm actually working on a book called The Park and the lessons you learn from playing pickup basketball in the 60s and 70s, that they don't play pickup basketball anymore. Like, get the parents out of the game. Let the kids go play, have fun, and hold each other accountable. You know, back when I played, it was, you'd show up at the park, the two better players would choose sides, and then they'd go through and pick 10 players. So there were 3 to 5 players that didn't get picked, right? And so now what do? Now you know how your peers feel about you as a player, right? And you couldn't blame anybody. You couldn't cry to mom, say, oh, I didn't get picked. And mom comes up storming at the park. Who's she going to get mad at? Well, on a team, organized team with the adults coaching, she can get mad at the coach and say, my son deserves because he, you know, worked with a trainer and, you know, he should be playing more. So that peer-to-peer evaluation is so powerful. And the freedom to love and enjoy the game, just to play the game. Like, do you love the game? I love basketball. I love the passing, the cutting, the teamwork, the individuality, the fact that there were no timeouts, you know, set timeouts within the game, like baseball or football. There was a constant flow to it. So I think just trying to find him, put him in position where he can have fun with the game and have coaches that are in it for the kids, not in it for themselves.
That's one of the biggest challenges. But I appreciate the answer, and we certainly try to make everything, especially at this age, as fun as we can for him. So thank you for indulging me in that question. I really appreciate it. We can go off on how people coach kids these days at another time in another conversation.
Yeah.
Real quick before we go, I know you're going to run. You talked about your book. You talked about your podcast. You talked about working as an executive coach. For people who want to connect with you, learn more from you, and get more great insights, where do they need to go? How do they find you?
Thank you, Michael. They can go to my website, dohertycoaching.com. That's DOHERTY coaching.com.
Awesome. I'll put links to your podcast and your book and everything else in the conversation. And when I send you a follow-up email, it will be 2 sentences with 3 bullet points.
You listen good.
I've got one job. I can screw up other stuff. That's my one job. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed all of our conversations. It's been great meeting you. I can't wait to get conversation at another time. I only have like 197 questions I thought of asking.
Well, we'll just have to do it again.
It would be my pleasure. I would love it. Thank you so much. Take care. I appreciate you being here. We'll see you soon.
Appreciate you.
Matt, thank you so much for an awesome conversation. That was a lot of fun, and I am grateful for all of the great insights, ideas, and stories that you shared. Thank you so much. I took a bunch of notes. I hope everybody listening took a bunch of notes as well. So much wisdom in one short conversation. I love how you said the truth is a gift, but we have to mine for it. We have to commit to mining for it, see the value in mining for it, and mine for it in the correct way. I love it. I also love your thought that one idea can 10X our life, one decision can 10X our life in either direction. So the thought we put into it is super important. The concept of augmenting yourself with your team's a great one. Don't hire people that are just like you. Be sometimes painfully honest and personal with where our weaknesses and opportunities are and hire to augment them. And then, man, that idea you shared about create the picture for people, but then hand them the paintbrush. Let them paint it. What a spectacular idea. I loved it. Thank you for a great conversation. I can't wait to do it again. And thank you to everybody that took the time to listen to that conversation. Again, we appreciate you being here week after week. Hopefully you enjoyed it as much as we did. And hopefully you took as many notes as I did as well. Thank you for being here. Before we head out, let's thank our sponsors, HumanTel. Again, if you've ever wanted to develop the skill set of understanding what people are likely thinking and feeling at any moment by accurately evaluating shifts and their facial expressions and nonverbal communication, please head over to humantel.com. Read their research, read their articles, decide which training is best for you, choose it, and get started. And while you're there, enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off their best-in-class online training. I've done it. I vouch for it. Head over to humantel.com and get started. For the professional interviewers, please check out certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you get all your questions answered about the International Association of Interviewers. What's it take to become a member, either as an individual or an organization? What online support tools are available? What in-person and virtual training programs are available? How can you contribute? What other resources are there? You get all those questions answered at certifiedinterviewer.com. That's also where you will learn how you can qualify for the Certified Forensic Interviewer exam, what it takes to prepare and pass, how to maintain the designation, and what the designation can mean for you and your career moving forward. All of that and more at certifiedinterviewer.com. And finally, while you're online, head over to inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the programs our clients ask us to custom facilitate for their senior leaders, negotiators, business development professionals, and HR executives to teach them the skills and perspectives, techniques necessary to obtain sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances, in the face of consequences, during all of their high impact conversations to quickly achieve their personal and professional goals. All of that and more at inquasive.com. Thank you all so much for being here week after week. Please, before you go, like the show, share the show, subscribe to the show on whichever platform you prefer to listen or watch. Let your friends know about it. Leave us your feedback so we can give you more of what you'd like to hear and see and less of what you would like to not hear and see. Thank you for continuing to be here. We appreciate it. Stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next week.